we got what it takes for the circle to break. Revolution lives in me.
Welcome to the Untamed and Unashamed podcast. I'm your host, Jade Bryce, and I am a certified love, intimacy, and relationship coach. I help women reconnect to their bodies and their pleasure, and I help men to become a safe space for that by becoming fully embodied leaders. The mission of this podcast is to expand our capacity in living untamed and unashamed. As we navigate life's ups and downs with all of the vulnerability, compassion, and openness that we can muster, and celebrating our bravery in all of it. Along with the help of guests from all walks of life, we'll discover new truths while doing some unlearning, and we'll gain valuable tools for becoming who we already are. So I invite you to open your heart and be untamed and unashamed. All right, you guys. So today is part two of my reflection from 2024. In the last episode, I did the first half, 1 through 12, and today I'm going to do the last half, 13 through 24. All right, so number 13, the 13th reflection is the heart of social justice, serving the cause, not the ego. So true social justice is not about feeling important. It's about the issue itself being important, right? So when we step into activism from a place of needing validation or of needing to be seen as the good one or the right one, then we're, or even just this feeling of like needing to be involved in something, which is like, it comes from a good place. But what happens sometimes when we enter into activism from this place is that we're no longer serving the cause itself. And in a way, we're kind of serving ourselves. And so when activism becomes an ego-driven performance, it actually does more harm than good. Because when we fight from ego, then we end up making the other side the enemy, and we dehumanize, and we come from a place of separation rather than the unity that justice actually requires for healing. And in that battle for self-importance, we lose sight of what would actually heal the situation. And the noise of our own righteousness drowns out the message that desperately needs to be heard. And you can feel it when someone engages in social justice, not because they truly care, but because they need to feel like they matter. Their words may be loud, but they don't land. Because true change doesn't come from performance, it comes from integrity and from listening, from recognizing the humanity on all sides, even when it's difficult. Real social justice work requires that humility, and it requires a willingness to look inward before looking outward and ask, am I doing this to serve the cause or to serve my own identity? Because when we fight for justice from a place of genuine care, from a heart that sees the humanity in all, that is when we create real change. And I love when people get involved on the behalf of others. And whatever the reason be, at least work is getting done. And if we can do it from this place, even more healing gets done as well. Reflection number 14, benign tumors can still kill. The subtle ways harm spreads. So we tend to think that the loudest forms of hate are the most dangerous, right? Like the person with the bullhorn on South Congress yelling, you know, that we're going to go to hell, you know, shouting their ignorance in the streets. And yes, that kind of hate is ugly. It's blatant. It's harmful. But it's not, in my opinion, the most dangerous. What's more dangerous is the quiet kind, the kind that looks polite, that hides behind kindness and gentle words. It's the parent who sits in the church pew and takes their child to church on Sunday and with the soft voice and a loving hand teaches their child to view others as less than and to discriminate. It's the well-meaning friend who unknowingly upholds systems of harm because they've never questioned them. It's the person who says, I'm not racist, I'm not sexist, I'm not homophobic, and yet in small, unconscious ways, reinforces the very things that they claim to be against. If you put someone who has been shamed or oppressed in front of both the bullhorn shouter and the churchgoer quoting scripture kindly, but for oppression, which one do you think would wound them more? Because we see the shouter's hate. It's obvious. We condemn it. But the gentle one, the one with the sweet voice, we let them impact us. We don't see it coming. And that's what makes it more poisonous. And I know this because I have my own blind spots. We all have our own benign tumors. We can't hide behind just being better than awful. It's about being willing to look deeper and to question where harm might be living inside of us, even in ways that we don't intend for it to. But we can't do this kind of searching alone. That's the power of relationships and of reflection from our community, of voices that challenge us, that help us see what we couldn't see on our own. Because the moment we believe we're immune to bias and to harmful conditioning is the moment that we stop growing. And if we truly want to create a better world, we have to be brave enough to look inward first. And reflection number 15, as within, so without, healing the divide. So the world we see around us is always reflecting what lives inside of us. As within, so without. If we are at war with parts of ourselves, if we're judging ourselves, rejecting a certain part of ourselves, trying to get rid of the pieces that we don't want to face instead of actually facing them, then that same war will play out in how we see others. So when we haven't made peace with our own contradictions, or when we cling to simple narratives of good and bad within ourselves, right and wrong thoughts, right and wrong feelings, hero and villain within us, we sort, and it's kind of like the inner critic and the inner queen. We sort, when we do that to ourselves, we sort other people into those categories as well sometimes, believing that if we can just destroy the bad, the world will be fixed. But division outside of us is only a mirror of the division within. And the more we feed the illusion of separation within us and in the world, the further we drift from true healing. Our brains are wired for duality. They're wired to categorize, to make meaning. But the deepest parts of us, the parts beyond ego, know that life is more complex than that. Nothing is as fixed as we think. So what if, instead of fueling the war, we become the space where integration happens? What if, instead of resisting our own shadows, we meet them with love and curiosity? What if we softened our grip on the need to make someone the villain and instead asked, what pain, what belief, what experience brought them here? And where does that also exist in me? This isn't about bypassing. It's not about a lack of accountability. It's about recognizing that true change doesn't come from deeper division. It comes from wholeness and from individuals willing to do the inner work of self-integration so that the outer world can reflect that unity back, because the world will not heal until we do. And change always starts with us. Reflection number 16, the body always knows. So before the mind fully understands, the body knows. It speaks in sensations like tightness, unease, a flutter, of recognition, a sinking weight in the gut, in our digestion, in our posture, and the way that we breathe. And before I could ever name why certain relationships weren't working out, my body could feel it and my body would speak to me. I silenced my voice in relationships or in places where my truth wasn't safe. I abandoned my boundaries to keep the peace, and my body, always loyal, reflected back what my soul was always trying to tell me through tension, through depletion, through aches in my muscles of self-betrayal. And the body is an oracle. It guides us towards what is meant for us when we know how to listen to it. It's an ancient keeper of wisdom. It's woven with the knowing of all who came before us. And it holds the stories of that lineage, past wounds and the map to the healing. And if we don't listen to it when it's whispering, then it will often find other ways to speak through exhaustion, through sickness, through dis-ease. And so it's so important that we listen to those whispers so that it doesn't have to then scream. And the body doesn't only warn, it reveals. Safety also has a feeling in the body, just as clear as danger does. The heart slows, the breath deepens, the body relaxes. There is space, ease, a quiet knowing of this is right. It's as if the universe is showing us, this is what safety feels like. This is what you deserve. And even if past trauma causes fears to come up, you can feel your body telling you to lean in. And of course, after trauma, especially trauma in relationship, the path back to trust isn't always clear, which brings me to the next reflection, reflection number 17. Peace can feel like discomfort at first. So if the body always knows, then the work is in learning how to listen and how to interpret what it's saying. Because after years of survival, safety can feel foreign. Sometimes when we've been traumatized, we have to discern when it's our trauma trying to sabotage something good. And we have to discern when it's our intuition speaking and when it's fear trying to keep us safe from something that actually no longer exists. Because for so long, I believed that love should feel intense, which I often experienced through chaos and through instability. I had been conditioned to confuse longing with love and instability with passion, because those things felt intense. And I had known the highs and lows of trauma bonds, the feeling of earning love, of chasing it, of proving myself worthy of it. And when something different arrived that felt steady and unwavering and was deeply present, I had to allow myself to receive it. I had to rewire myself to receive it. And our nervous systems, the thing is our nervous systems are wired for familiarity, even when that familiarity is harmful. So that saying, you feel like home, we have to be so careful, because for some of us, home was not safe. Home was chaotic. And so if love has always been chaos, peace can feel like a lack of something. If love has always been earned, unconditional devotion feels undeserved. And we mistake stillness for stagnation. We mistake ease for lack of intensity or lack of chemistry. But sometimes when we've had to learn to survive in chaos, we think we need chaos to survive. And so healing requires a recalibration, a rewiring to receive what is truly nourishing rather than what is familiar. And I talked about this in the last episode about how to allow your nervous system to expand, to hold more good, and to be able to receive good when it shows up. And so hopefully you caught that in the last episode. But to receive the love I'd always prayed for, I had to surrender also to what I had prayed for. I had to trust that I could be adored, not for how much I gave or how my physical appearance was, not for how much I tolerated, but simply for who I am, for my being. And when something beautiful enters our life, it may feel unfamiliar, but we have to be open to not pushing it away because it feels unfamiliar. It may not be a sign to run. It may be the first time we felt safe. It may be the first time our body is learning what peace feels like. And so the harmony between the last reflection and this one is, well, the harmony lies in discernment. The body does always know. And sometimes after trauma, we have to learn how to discern its messages. Intuition and trauma can sometimes feel the same at first. And so part of healing is learning the difference. Reflection 18, fear and faith can coexist. So faith, in my experience, does not mean the absence of fear. It means walking forward anyway, holding both in your hands and choosing to move with trust, even when fear gives you every reason why you should not. This past year tested that in me over and over. My finances felt unstable. I was faced with a legal battle that could change everything for me and my children. And at times I was terrified. Fear definitely came and sat beside me, very heavy, very insistent. But alongside that fear, there was also this faith that I've always had that says, God's got me. And faith is often misunderstood. It's not blind optimism. It's not like the laziness of like, I don't need to be proactive. Like, it'll work itself out. It's not pretending either that fear isn't real or bypassing it. It's the knowing deep in our bones that even when we can't see the outcome, something greater is holding us, that God's got us, and that belief itself shifts things. That belief itself, it changes the brain, it shifts energy, and it opens doors. And that faith for me did show true. When I worried about finances, provision came. A very incredible, loving partner that wanted to take care of us showed up. In the court case as well, fear nearly paralyzed me. And it's why I didn't enter into this process for so long. But faith carried me forward, and it's giving me strength. And we don't have to wait until we're fear-free to take that next step. Faith doesn't demand ever perfect confidence. It doesn't demand that we're fear-free. It simply asks us to move. We can let fear be there without letting it drive. We can let faith take the seat at the head of the table, and we are always being held. God's got us. Reflection number 19, you have been led all along. So it's easy to think that we're stumbling through life, unsure, uncertain, unprepared. But looking back, even though I felt that way for so much of my life, looking back, I see so much divine orchestration that gave me protection. And it was never just coincidence. So years ago, I set aside money in my account for my children, determined to have it for their future. I had no idea what that future would hold. I just felt guided to do it. I knew that I was supposed to do it. And this last year, when I entered into a custody case, that money became the exact amount I needed to hire an attorney. And it ended up being for my children, like I always knew, just not in the way that I had imagined. So our intuition, our choices, even the small nudges we don't understand yet, are guiding us. We just have to trust that the path is unfolding exactly as it needs to, and that the version of us from years ago was already making choices and decisions with a higher wisdom we couldn't even see, protected by higher forces that we also couldn't see. And isn't it beautiful the way that life unfolds when we are choosing to be a light in the world? How things align in ways we never could have planned. If we were watching our life as a movie, we'd be in awe of the way that the story weaves together. The foreshadowing, the full circle moments, the unexpected ways things work out synchronistically. We're living inside a story more magical than we realize. And the answers are always coming, and we are more prepared than we think. We just have to follow those little intuitive nudges. So reflection number 20. This is something that really stuck with me from my episode with the Laughing Circle. Talks about consent in there, and this really stuck with me. So the reflection is teaching our children consent from no means no to yes means yes. When it comes to consent, we need to teach that it's not just about listening for a no. Through the energy of the moment and the signals that another person's body is giving off, that our bodies communicate. It's not just the words that we listen to, but through the shift in posture, the holding of breath or the breath becoming shallow, the looking down instead of being able to look at someone's face. We can hear consent and the energy between us and the other person as well. So when a woman feels safe and seen, her body opens in ways that words alone cannot capture. And you can see her safety in her ability to look in your eyes, in your deep breath, in her comfortable body language. Our bodies have this wisdom that transcends language. And so teaching young men to not only listen for consent, but to feel for consent and watch for consent is incredibly important. If they only listen for a no, then they miss the body language that can speak way louder than any words could. And it's this sacred dance of empathy and mutual respect that we have to teach our children. When we begin to teach consent in this way, we move beyond just yes or no and into something greater. We begin to move into trust and respect and the kind of connection that is truly sacred and memorable. And we can also teach our daughters what that feels like in their bodies and how to honor it. The subtle knowings, the intuitive senses that tells them when they are in full body yes and when something feels off. So if a young woman is not at a place of knowing her body in this way, then she really is not at a stage to be able to share her body with another. And so that's something that we really have to teach our daughters, is that we need to know our bodies so well before we give it to another. And when we know our bodies that well, we know when our body is saying yes or no to a person. And this is a responsibility that anyone engaging in intimate acts needs to truly understand and commit to. Otherwise, the maturity itself isn't there for engaging in the sexual act. Okay, reflection number 21. But I mean, man, think about, I'm sure so many, just to close off on that last one, actually, another thought that came is like, think about how different some of our first sexual experiences would have been had we been taught that version of consent. Had young boys been taught to see and feel for consent and to even ask for consent, most of them. And then think about how different those experiences would have been if we had been taught how to feel a yes or no in our bodies and how to honor our bodies in that way and how to know them that well. It would have changed everything. Okay, reflection number 21, the power of a man saying, I've got you. I love this one. And this is a reflection from my Max Trombley episode, which is probably one of my favorite episodes of 2024. Max Trombley is just, he's incredible. I hope you follow him on Instagram because his reels every single day are just, they challenge me to be better in relationship. So, but we have a whole part of the episode where he's talking about the power. So for me, one of the most romantic, grounding, and comforting sentences a woman can hear is, I've got you. There's absolute magic in these words that provides so much security and provides a reassurance that allows her to melt into your masculine covering. And in a world that often feels chaotic and unpredictable, where a woman has had to learn to carry so much on her own and learn that she has to protect herself, these words, I've got you, land like a breath she didn't know she was holding. And hearing that sentence is a form of protection, a spiritual, emotional, and energetic protection. It's, to me, a promise that she is safe to soften, to release, to trust. And it lets a woman know that she's not too much, that her man can handle her, that her softness and her fire, her ever-shifting emotions are not a burden, but something that he is fully here for, and that he can hold all of her. And when a man says, I've got you, he's not just offering safety. He's inviting the woman into a sacred trust where she can be herself in a much deeper way. It's an unspoken promise that her fears will be met with compassion, that her dreams and intuitions will be supported, and that she won't have to carry the burdens of life on her own. And it's through these moments of safety that a woman is able to relax into herself, to drop her defenses and open to the deepest parts of love, creativity, and playfulness, because the feminine cannot truly surrender in the absence of trust. And there's a quote that says, I don't know who said it, but there's a quote that says, a woman's brain cannot relax until she feels physically and emotionally safe. Many men don't understand how much energy women expend checking whether they're safe. providing an environment where she can turn off that part of her brain allows her to truly settle into her femininity. And this is not about dependence. It's about freedom. Because when a woman feels truly safe in the presence of a man, she becomes more of herself with that man. She becomes more playful, more nurturing, more radiant, more creative. She steps deeper into her feminine essence, not because she's been given permission, but because she's been given space to simply be herself. And when a woman feels this safety, she softens because she knows that without a doubt, she's held in love. All parts of her are held in love. She's not too much. And providing the safety is not meant to be a burden, but a blessing and a gift, because it truly heals the world. And it's why union is such a healing force. And it's how love changes the world. I've brought up this show a couple of times, but there's a show on Netflix called Nobody Wants This. And my favorite moment is when she opens up to him about a vulnerability, something she's afraid of. And basically, she's afraid she'll be too much. And he answers with, "I can handle you." And it's the same as "I've got you." He said, "I can handle you." And my entire being like melted into the couch. I watched it twice, melted into the couch, because it is what every woman wants to feel from her man. Like, he can handle her, that it's not too much. And I'm so glad that show exists, because there's not shows like that. And I'm so thankful. I'm going to probably watch it again soon. Okay. Reflection number 22, dancing in the kitchen, how safety unlocks a woman's full expression. So this reflection is similar to the last one in that it is about safety in a relationship, but I want to be clear that it is definitely both people's job in a relationship to create that safety and to be open to it. If I didn't create safety for myself, then I'm not going to be able to receive it from a partner. So it is both people's job, and it's very much our job to be open to it when someone provides it, right? So this is just a reflection. So want to specify, it's both people's job. And in this specific example, this is just a reflection from a specific experience when it came to a lack of safety I had in a relationship. So I had a partner from a while back once complain that I never danced in the kitchen. And I was shocked, because I was like, what? I'm always dancing. I literally have a sign in my kitchen that says this kitchen is meant for dancing. It says we dance in this kitchen. And I have a little disco ball. I literally have a disco ball in my kitchen, and I dance with my kids in there every day. And so I was like, wait, what? What do you mean I don't dance in the kitchen? And then one day, no one was home, and I was just dancing nonstop and so freely. And in that moment, I realized I wasn't actually dancing when he was there. And so I started to ask why. And it took me a moment to figure it out. But in that reflection, I realized that I didn't have the safety to feel fully seen, which isn't only, again, a partner's responsibility. I have to let myself be seen. There are many safe partners where it takes us a while to feel safe to allow ourselves to be fully seen. Totally. However, in this particular past relationship, I wasn't feeling fully safe in his presence to express the fullness of who I am. And when a woman's sense of safety is compromised, she suppresses her wildness and she holds back. So if we want a woman who dances in the kitchen and is playful and is a seductress, we have to prioritize her safety. We have to allow her to be everything and to be accepted for it. We have to let her know that her anxiety would never be too much. We have to let her fail around us. We have to let her know that when she fails, it's okay to make mistakes. We have to be a man of repair. So when I'm saying we, I'm speaking to the men, but being a man of repair provides so much safety, because if we know repair is there, repair is going to happen, then the rupture is way less scary. Because a woman can feel it when a man is judging how she moves. if a man looks at her with adoring eyes, and if she truly feels from him that nothing she does could cause him to leave or be turned off by her, that's when her wild and playful and untamed and unashamed animal will come out. And that's when she'll be dancing all around the house, especially when the man is home. And this is the purpose of my work, to help men understand what creates this safety so they can lead with love and so women can step into their full unapologetic power through opening up to that safety when a man provides it. And one of my favorite parts of working with men is helping them understand women and their needs when it comes to the words they use when speaking to them that adds safety and creates more connection. And just a quick disclaimer on this one, I admittedly get overstimulated. I struggle with sensory issues and getting overstimulated quite often, and especially when I'm cooking dinner and trying to get the kids to the table without issues, while sometimes already hearing complaints about what I cooked and it's not even on the table yet, and they're running through tight space in the kitchen with me holding all the hot plates. It is unrealistic to expect a woman to be dancing around carefree in the midst of stimulating multitasking and service. And what could be said if your woman is experiencing overstimulation is, hey, baby, and this is my example, like a kind of an example of how I try to help guide men into how to speak to their women in a way that creates safety. If this is, you know, the case, as an example, something that would be beautiful for the man to say is, hey, baby, I notice you arrived at the dinner table a bit stressed. Is there anything I can do to make that experience easier for you, or to make that experience more pleasurable for you? This is a beautiful invitation, and you're offering yourself as a teammate here. Instead of a complaint that feels like you're trying to change her or tell her that she's not enough, it's a calling forward instead of out. Because she already knows that she's this way. She doesn't want to arrive to the table overwhelmed. She's probably already really hard on herself about it. So remembering that true safety isn't about like making her feel worse about that or asking her to perform with joy. It's about letting her know she's held in the fullness of who she is, even in the moments when she's overstimulated instead. Reflection number 23. We got two more. Compassion for the past self. So when my partner and I first met, we exchanged childhood pictures of each other. And when I looked at the one of me, I was around 4 years old. I felt this deep, heart-wrenching compassion for that little girl. I wanted to hold her. I wanted to protect her. And I wanted to tell her that everything would be okay. I could see the way her needs were too big for the people around her. And I just wanted to embrace her with everything I had. It made me want to hold my kids tighter and with more patience and make sure that their needs were met. And that same compassion flowed over me when I came across another photo shortly after. There were photos of me from like 11 years ago. It was a day that I walked the red carpet for Bad Grandpa. And I remembered that particular day and the photos so well. I had only let myself have like half a piece of fruit because I was being told I needed to lose weight. I was dating men that told me how I needed to change my body as well. And I was treating my body like a workplace and not my home. I see these photos and I see her fears and I see her depression. I see her rawness and honesty about all of it as well. But when I see these photos, I don't only see her pain. I see her awe of the world, her kindness, her gratitude for how good she had it, her desire to help children, her open heart, her hunger for truth, her thirst for expansive adventure, her trust in God and hope for the future, her love for her friends, unknowingly pedestaling them while learning to feel like a peer, her willingness to heal and grow, confused by her body's inability to open up to any lover, which has now turned into a gift because I've been able to heal that. But when I look at my current self, I wonder what kind of compassion I'll have for her years from now. 10 years from now, when I look back at a photo from this time in my life, how will I see myself? When it comes to being a single mom for years that provided so much that never felt like enough at the same time, because I always wanted to provide more. A woman, you know, these last couple of years who's desired deep sacred union with the man I can fully devote to safely for life, and to offer my gifts in a way that feels purpose-filled and also feels silky. A woman who was and still is nervous to release her book while also trusting the call that she's supposed to. A woman who has spent all this time reparenting herself in the midst of her kids' tantrums, making a home out of each rental that they've lived in, desiring so deeply to become skilled at my nervous system and a black belt at repair and relationship, and still waking up each day in the midst of longing and uncertainty, and still dancing with my kids after breakfast, because no matter what, I want them to remember to dance with God as the disco ball. So I'm curious, so when I look back at this time, with all of that, will I see beauty that I'm maybe missing now? Will I want to be more gentle with myself? Will I see it all as perfect? And I probably will, because it is all perfect and it's human nature to forget that, so that we can remember. It's in the remembering that we learn. And as I looked at those old photos, I was so thankful for this moment of remembering, and it felt like an invitation in that moment to choose to soften towards myself, not just later, to witness my own unfolding with reverence, the way I know I will when I look back, to hold myself just as I would hold that little girl. Reflection number 24. We cannot lose the one meant for us. So I feel so deeply that we cannot lose the person meant for us. The journey of life might take us through so much heartbreak and disappointment and loss, but the person who is meant for us, we cannot lose. That's just not how it works to me. If someone leaves or betrays us in a way that brings us the need to leave, that is simply not our person. The one meant for us will stay and will treat us in ways that allow us to stay as well. And sometimes it feels like we're losing love. But what's actually happening is a making of space. And maybe every heartbreak and every ache and every hollowed out moment is the universe carving a deeper place within us for a love that will stay, guiding us towards what is most aligned with our soul's purpose. Every heartbreak, every misstep, every moment of fear, I feel is a part of that process that leads us to the one we are meant to be with. And when the right one comes, we won't have to chase. We won't have to twist ourselves into smaller shapes to fit. Our body will know before our mind does. Settling, softening, exhaling. And that person will stay, not because they have to, but because they fear, and not because they fear losing us, but because the nature of real love is to remain. Because the essence of true love is rooted in devotion, and they will stay because the energy between us is both ancient. The energy between y'all is both ancient. And the universe is not cruel. We just have to trust that it has a plan and trust that it has our highest good in mind, and that we have to trust the hands that guide that. And that in perfect timing, we will meet the person who resonates with the deepest parts of us, the one who holds space for our growth, our wildness, our peace, and trust that what is meant for us is coming. Like a lover returning home after many lifetimes, it will be felt. And I feel there is no force strong enough to tear apart what the universe is meant to unite. We cannot lose what is meant for us. So as I reflect on everything that 2024 has gifted me, it was a year of many plot twists, full of lessons and challenges and beauty, I feel a deep sense of gratitude. because this year has asked me to rise in ways I didn't know that I could, that I didn't know were possible. And for all of it, I am so thankful. For every high, every low, every moment in between, I feel gratitude and reverence for. So as we are, you know, into 2025 now, I pray that this year we embrace more love, that we have the courage to trust the unfolding of our lives and the wisdom to know that we are always being guided, that we learn to be kinder to ourselves and to others, that we dance more, we laugh more, and we love more deeply than ever before. And here's to a year filled with grace and with ease, even in the struggles, and with an unwavering belief in the beauty of what is to come. God, please show us how good it can get. All right, you guys, thank you for walking through these reflections with me. I am so grateful for you. It would mean so much if you'd leave a review or share an episode with a friend. You can also join me on Instagram at Untamed and Unashamed Podcast. As always, be a light, stay open, and remember, you belong here.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to leave up holiday decorations year-round. Others have the need to use their garage as practice space for their new metal band. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.